Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
It is Wednesday night. You know what that means. You're here with Justin, Issa, and Jimmy for the post-AEW Dynamite Wednesday night podcast on the Wrestling Channel across all of the platforms. Good evening to all you people live, and hello to anybody else listening or watching everywhere, anywhere in the world at a later time. Going to be a fun one here tonight, but first, pleasantries while everybody comes in and finds their seat, as one Jack Farmer would say. Issa, first off, how are you? Back from San Antonio, and as I always find myself now telling you, after you're making these big trips, you once again killed it. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate that. Tired. I still haven't slept. I still have so much content, so many things to edit and upload, but it was a very productive, exciting weekend.
Who's your favorite interview for the weekend?
Dominic Mysterio.
Dominic. I love the way he was dressed too, you know.
Dominic stayed in character and did my interview in Spanish. As you know, I go out there with Lucha Libre Online, which is our Spanish network, so any content that I can get in Spanish is a major plus. But he stayed in character, killed it. I loved it.
Awesome. And give the plug real quick. We'll do a plug on top. Where can people find the content?
They can go see some of the interviews are up on Lucha Libre Online, and they can follow me on YouTube, NYC Demon Diva. I do have a lot of things coming up this week, including the vlog, some of the reactions, because, you know, Justin Labar, we started with reactions. We can't stop doing those now. But I don't know if they told you this. You know, we missed the entire Bloodline breakup.
No. Why? What happened? Oh, because you guys were getting ushered down to the press conference.
Right. As soon as they counted 1, 2, 3, they came and got us. I heard the crowd go crazy, so I turned it on my phone, but we missed it. So I didn't get to see the story that I'm the most invested in. I missed the entire breakup, but it was done beautifully. I'm very proud of how they told that story, but yeah, we didn't get to see it.
I've never done the press box in the big stadiums. The only time I've done the WWE press for, cause you know me, I like to be able to sit and have beers and what have you. And I can't do that if I'm doing press. The only time I've is I've been sitting lower bowl, like hard camera section for takeovers, and that's an easy just go down the thing, get behind the curtain, and they take you to the press conference room. So you can do that quick. Yeah, but I guess the stadium, you got to take an elevator all the way. And...
Yeah, the press box. Oh. No, it was stairs too at the Alamo Dome. They made us go down to the basement in the stairs. When I did the press conference for War Games, they had us sitting in the lower bowl, so it was easy. We were there in just a few minutes, so I did get to see the entire ending. They didn't have to come get us before. But everybody that you saw at the scrum, we were all watching it from our phones inside the room like everybody else. We didn't get to see it live. We heard the pop. It was loud. We heard it all the way in the basement, but we didn't get to see it.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess I can't. Oh, man. Wow. Nonetheless, still a great weekend for you. But I did not even think about that. But as soon as you said it, it popped in my head. They had to get you guys all the way down.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Jimmy Cordair. I mean, Jimmy, it's like every other day you and I are just talking about wrestling. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. Good to see you, Issa. I'm glad you had a great trip in San Antonio there for the Rumble weekend. You know, I don't know how to follow up that little adventure, that's for sure. But I'm just here trying to stay warm, and things I'm sure will heat up here on our podcast tonight.
I'm sure that they will. You know, it's an interesting night when I send a text to Jimmy in the first 5 minutes of Dynamite because I couldn't resist.
Oh, we were talking about Jimmy on my stream 10 minutes into it.
Oh, I can only imagine.
I
can text because I'm doing a live stream, but I will tell you, I bring you guys up because I'm always like, oh, I can't wait to talk about this with them. And my chat was bringing you up, Jimmy, because of things that were happening. So,
cool.
it's probably about the same time that I text
him. Yep.
Yeah. Before we get into the news headlines, again, thanks to everybody who's again filing in here on the live stream in the chat room. We appreciate all the regular characters we see, and we love the loyalty. Again, please like, comment, subscribe, whether it's on YouTube, whether you're watching on Facebook, or if you're watching on Twitch, if you're doing the audio only, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from. If you leave the 5-star rating, that's going to do the most good for this podcast and our channel. We got a lot of exciting things going on here for 2023. So the better you guys can give us those ratings and marks, the more support we are going to get in every which way. And support means we can do more things. Support means maybe more traveling. Support things maybe, it just means everything more. So if you got a quick second, we would appreciate doing that. Of course, this podcast is free to consume, which we love and hope that you enjoy every single week, all week long here on Wrestling Inc. All right, let's go ahead and jump into some news. We got two, one WWE related and one AEW. I'll do the WWE first, and then we'll be all hands on deck for AEW for the remainder of the podcast. This coming from Fightful Select. They reported just earlier this evening about Brock Lesnar and a little bit of backstage heat that he might currently have after the Royal Rumble. Of course, if you saw Rumble, Brock did get eliminated by Bobby Lashley and then proceeded to blow up and explode. Well, that part, it seems, was scripted. You know, Brock's going to react big. He's going to sell the anger, sell the moment of Bobby eliminated him. But some elements of Brock's blow up was not necessarily known. Most notably, when Brock, as he's trying to be restrained by the referees, sends one of the referees, I believe his first name is Eddie, into the first row. That was not planned. Actually, that referee, from what Fightful's reporting, was supposed to be the one who was going to be raising Cody's hand after Cody wins the Rumble. That couldn't happen because now Eddie has to sell this and go to the back. So, you know, Jimmy, it's natural for me to go to you, the ref here. You know, and Fightful does note, I mean, how much heat can there, I mean, backstage heat for Brock Lesnar translates different. He's not going to be fired. He's not going to be what have you. But still, when you do something that nobody's expecting, especially when it involves physicality on somebody else, especially physicality on a role player like a ref, in a match where the refs need to be out there, that can get dicey. I mean, your reaction when you hear this?
No, it's interesting because to me, it just sounds like, you know, the guys you seem today have to a little bit more creative freedom to do a little more. It's not as we have to follow this line completely. And Brock is the kind of guy that when he gets excited and he's supposed to, you know, go nuts after his elimination and show his anger and frustration, maybe took it a step too far. Let's put it that way. Throwing the referee Eddie over the barricade into the front row, maybe a little bit much, but at the same time, it shows a frustration. But the whole thing about Eddie was supposed to be the one raising Cody's hand. I think that's not as much of an issue as it is the fact that he went into business for himself and took a referee out. You know, I think that's more the issue. You know, as far as who raises Cody's hand, maybe it was an issue with Cody. Maybe Cody wanted Eddie to raise his hand or something like that. And that's, you know, part of the problem. But as far as that end of it, I don't see as much of an issue as it is with, like I said, going into business for yourself, putting your hands on someone and bumping someone that isn't supposed to get bumped.
Issa, I'd imagine as long as Eddie's okay and cool with it and there's a handshake in the back of, hey, thanks, man. I got to say, as long as everybody's cool, that actually, Brock, that put it over the top. I mean, I remember that. I was like, whoa, this is getting pretty crazy here.
Yeah, I liked it. I need Brock. Brock needs to sell the story a lot because they fumbled the bag with Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. They have. And if this is the plan, the direction that we're going, I did think that Brock's reaction added to that because a lot of people were more here for the stare down between him and Gunther than they were from Bobby Lashley and Brock. So it is up to Bobby and Brock now to want to get us to watch that match again. I hope everything is okay. If everything's not okay, I would love to see somebody take it up to Brock and see how that goes for them. I think his reaction sold how upset he was, and that's just what Brock does.
I agree. And to what Jimmy was saying, you know, when Brock gets excited, you know, Brock, we've seen Brock. It's like everybody has this picture that like Brock's like, just pay me and I'm in and I'm out. But I mean, and while he is, you know, in and out, he's not, he does get excited about his work. He does want, like, we've seen him. He will sell when it's the appropriate time. And like, so I think Jimmy's wording is correct. He knew that he had a moment here to sell him freaking out or whatever. And he, what can I do to, you know, make it memorable? Like I said, it was memorable for all of us, as it seems. So
I think Brock is the sellers in WWE, and I'm willing to have that debate with anybody.
Yeah, and if you want someone to look like a beast and a monster, you know, that's exactly what he did. And he looked like someone you don't want to mess with.
Yeah. Yeah, to the point of if there's any if anybody backstage is upset at him, I would hope the WWE24 camera crew is around to try to capture that.
If they were upset about anything, they should be upset saying, listen, we need to know stuff like this so that we can get a great shot of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Also, not for nothing, I mean, maybe Cody did want Eddie to raise his hand, but I feel like when it comes to a Royal Rumble win, we're here for the sign point. Nobody's here for the referee. No offense, Jimmy, but nobody's here for the referee raising the arm. We're here to see them point at the freaking sign, okay? So we can move on from this.
Yeah, I trust me, I'm not offended because nobody ever paid for a ticket to see me referee a match. Anybody that came to see me referee got a comp from me.
Well, no, but final... I mean, I like the visual of the ref raising the arm, right? But I am a huge fan of sign pointing. It's a thing. It's a meme. We love it. And I just want to see the Royal Rumble winners point at the freaking sign. We wait all years for that visual of it. Yeah. You know, when they win at Mania, then you want to see the referee raise their arm. But at the Rumble, I'm not thinking the referee is going to raise his arm. I'm thinking he's going to point at the sign. And that's my mentality.
Well, my final thoughts on this subject, Brock should have just thrown the referee into Hardy in the front row because Hardy was sitting in front of that.
Oh, my God. Then we would have not had to go. Listen, I'll shut up. I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that.
Bigger pop. All right. The other news item we're going to touch on, a press release that was sent out to a bunch of us this evening from AEW announcing the launch of their live event series that's going to be called AEW House Rules. That's right. They are moving into the non-televised live events, or house shows, as they're most commonly called in the WWE lingo. And basically, just to cut to the chase, the first one is going to be Saturday, March 18th. Now, they do note it's not going to be every weekend, but it will be weekends. It doesn't look like they're looking to do any weekdays. The only weekdays is still going to be Wednesday Dynamite. But select weekends, particular markets, the first one's going to be Saturday, March 18th in Troy, Ohio, at the Hobart Arena. We'll feature John Moxley, Claudio, Dr. Britt Baker, Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy, many more. Tickets going to start at $20. Tickets going on sale at the end of the week. And so, you know, they're getting the live event business. And Isai, I guess I'll toss to you first on this. I think this was inevitable, especially when I saw them bring on Jeff Jarrett. And when I heard what Jeff's title was in the office, it very much translated into, you know, Jeff's been a promoter his entire life. So I was like, okay, I could see Jeff helping steer them into the live event space. There's pros and cons to it, but I want to hear you and then Jimmy and see where we land on this expansion by AEW.
Yeah, I think there's pros and cons to this. I'm excited for it. I think there's a lot of fans. AEW, I've been a little bit critical of the fact that they keep visiting the same markets. And I do think this is a way for them to experiment with different markets, see how they do, see how the tickets sell. I'm also a big fan of house shows. I think you get a better interaction in a different kind of show. And I think you don't get to see that. The wrestlers can get some reps. They can start, you know, wrestling each other, working with each other. I mean, there's a lot of pros to this. And as a company, if you're not making money, this is another revenue source. So I think this is a win for everybody involved, especially for the fans. I just hope that they do go to different markets when they do these exclusive shows and allow people that don't get the chance to see them to see them, because you do see WWE put on house shows at towns that you've never heard of. But that's the reason why. It's because they want all of these fans to get to see their favorite superstars.
Yeah, Jimmy, AEW, Troy, Ohio. I believe this arena, as I look, hockey holds, when there's hockey games, it's like 3,500. When it's right, like a concert, it looks a little bit closer to 5,000. So they could have potentially, somewhere in between that.
Yeah, and you can have a nice mix of superstars that don't get an opportunity to display their wares on television. Let's put it that way. You know, there's a lot of superstars in AEW that basically you have to watch them on their YouTube channel. And a lot of people, you know, obviously they're not getting as many eyes there as they are on Wednesday nights or even on Friday nights. So here's an opportunity for them to get them in front of a live crowd and see what kind of reaction and how they're resonating and see who might be working and say, hey, here's someone we might have to bring to television because they're connecting with the audience. They've got something that's working. Let's try it out on television and see if we can capitalize on it here.
Yeah, I like the idea of getting guys and girls more reps in front of a live crowd. Mm-hmm. That's even with the tapings of Dynamite and Rampage, it's still limited to an extent. I like that. I think overall, and a lot of this goes back to what Issa says, I think in the short term, this is a loss, but in the long game, this could play out to be a win for them. What I mean is, in the short term, it's still an expense. You got to have the building, you got to get all the talent there. Even if it's not TV, they're still going to pay crew people to, you know, help make the event happen. So, you know, look, we saw WWE pulling back on their live events before the pandemic because they were just losing money. They were having, you know, quarters where they were just, you know, so I think in the short term, I don't expect AEW to be profiting on each of these events. But to the reps point of view that we just talked about, Issa mentioned about how you get a more interactive experience. I think this will allow them. You know, now they get to be in two cities in a week. You know, they have wherever they're at for Dynamite and then wherever they do for this on that particular week. So they do get to expand more places faster, do more local media, more local radio, more local TV, you know, get their brand out there in a more personal way. You know, they have a long way to go to catch up to the, you know, 40-year head start that WWE has. But I think it's, you know, it certainly is a way to utilize, and like you said, utilize the roster. You have a lot of guys and girls to work with.
And really quickly, you know, they, like you said, select weekends or whatever the case may be. You don't have to do it every weekend. Start off slow, and if it starts working, then you can build to, you know, a more lengthy schedule for the talent. Let's put it that way. Because when we used to do it, you know, Raw and SmackDown, when we had the brand split, everybody had their own crew, but they set it up in a way where it was pretty much drivable between each town, so you didn't have to, you know what I mean? That was cost effective for them that way. So it all depends on how they do things too. You know, right now, we all know that the money is in television and television revenue. That's where the big money is, but this is still a way to make some money if you do it right.
Right. I agree. And you never have to apologize, Jimmy. We're having a conversation here. I think it is smart of them not to, like, I think it's wise of them to keep it open-ended, select weekends when they want, because I think that would have been a mistake if they came out and said, every Saturday now we're going to be, you know, no, don't put yourself in that expectation, in that position. Like, feel it out. And feel it out of how your roster reacts to it, because your locker room might be split, because we've heard one of the things that is attractive, especially to the older people in the locker room, is that the schedule is so much lighter than WWE's or other places. So, you know, don't all of a sudden say, oh, now everybody's going to be having to work every Saturday as well. Like, mm-hmm. So feel it out. See who takes to it and who's selling tickets and who's not. So interesting times for AEW with the launch of House Rules. Again, if you want the information, Troy, Ohio, March 18th, and tickets go on sale this Friday at AEWTIX.com. Okay, let's go ahead and jump into Dynamite. Coming to you from the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio. I was the only kid in second grade in my class in Southern Maryland who knew where Dayton, Ohio was because King of the Ring 93 was there. Jerry Lawler attacked Bret Hart. Yokozuna in a photographer's camera exploded in Hulk Hogan's face and he left the WWF. All happened in Dayton.
Wow.
Wrestling taught me my American and Canadian geography well before any teacher did. I can tell you
nice.
That much.
Nice. You knew exactly where Calgary, Alberta, Canada was, right?
I can name you most of the provinces in Canada when I was in second grade, and I had never even sniffed and been close to Canada. yeah, all thanks to Bret Hart. We kick off Dynamite with Jon Moxley, almost hometown. He's about an hour away, coming through the crowd with Wheeler Yuta and Jon Moxley's father. So they come through the crowd to make his entrance. He's having his match against Hangman Page. These guys fight all over the place for I don't even know how long it was before we ever got the bell. They fight into the crowd. We saw a figure four on the arena floor. That's not something you often see. Pretty nuts there. Finally, these guys get in the ring. Bell rings. Continue to have a hard-hitting battle. Jon Moxley bleeds. We'll get back to that in a second. Mm-hmm. finally, though, we get Hangman Page. He's trying to take Moxley out with Moxley's own side bulldog sleeper. Moxley is able to then grab Hangman's leg, basically roll forward and cradle him for like a modified,
inside
small cradle. Package inside yeah. cradle. And Jon Moxley gets the victory 1-2-3. Post-match, both guys still middle fingers to each other, arguing. Wheeler Yuta and Claudio have to come out and kind of separate them. Jimmy, I was a little surprised. I kind of thought Page might win this. Just by the way that they were building leading up to this. So I'm a little surprised that he didn't. I'm a little surprised that it was a roll up and this does not seem like this is done. It seems like we have more matches to come with these guys.
See, you kind of made an argument in this match for either one of them winning and not the other one not getting hurt in the loss. The old adage, you can still get over without going over. But there were so many little things as physical as this match was, and there were some moments in it that I was going, "Oh, this is getting really good." There was stuff that didn't make sense. I talk about the little things all the time. You mentioned the figure four on the floor before the match even started. They're fighting out on the floor. They're beating each other up. The bell hasn't rung yet. They're going crazy. They're knocking each other into, barricades and stuff like that. And yes, you want to work on the leg, but what do you do? A wrestling move on the floor, a figure four. To me, that was a disconnect. And then they get into the ring. They start to have a pretty good match going, and I'm getting invested in this. And then they start fighting outside again on the apron. And they're there for a long time. The referee's not counting again. But then later on in the match, they tease the count out. And it's little things like that. And there were some.
And that is exactly when we started talking about you on my stream.
I can only imagine. And then, but here's Hangman hitting Mox with some devastating maneuvers. You can name them whatever you want, but they looked incredible. And Mox kicked out of all of them. And the finish we get is an inside cradle roll up, whatever you want to call it, for 1-2-3. Again, for me, another disconnect, and did no favors for Hangman Page, as well as the blood really didn't mean anything in this match.
Issa, where are you at with Moxley getting the win here in the rubber match? But it clearly doesn't seem like these two are done.
I thought the match was good. I thought it was fun. It was I was a sucker for Moxley bringing out the dad because, of course, you know how I am. But I didn't like the teasing of the count out after they fought the majority of the match on the outside. I also didn't like that the bell didn't ring for like the first 7 minutes, so I didn't know what was going on. I think the bell actually ran at like 8:07. Sorry, I'm an hour ahead. So outside of that, once it rang, it got very good, but the rules weren't being followed, so that confuses you a little. Just make every match a no DQ, but you couldn't do that because you're closing the show with one. I thought Moxley was winning here the entire time. I did think they were going to be done with this feud, which doesn't appear to be. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, the match was pretty entertaining. The energy and fury these two had at each other, it was palpable. I could feel it, even after the match. If placed right, the middle fingers and the jaw jacket, it felt it had a real, like, these guys got real tension. So I give that to the compliment to them. Yeah, and I agree with what you guys said, but you know, you're doing a move on the floor, you know, all these things. The thing, and this is what I couldn't shy away from. And at first, that's why I just texted Jimmy. I didn't tweet it. I wasn't going to bring it up. But then I looked at Twitter, and clearly it was not missed. But I mean, it was, you know, it's not like I would have been the only one to say this. So I'm just going to bring it up. And this is where you need, again, you need more production meetings. You need more communication of what are you going to do. Because what I'm going to say is technically the fault of the production truck and them switching to the camera they did at the time they did. But if they would have been communicated to prior, they would have never done this. They would have helped mask the illusion. But when Moxley finally gets in the ring after they did all the fighting outside, Moxley finally gets in the ring and goes and sits in the corner. And then they go from Hangman outside, then they cut to a close up of Moxley. And what is Moxley doing in that close up? He's getting a razor out of his mouth. He starts blading his head. For him to start bleeding 15 seconds later. And it's like, again, if you plan to do that, communicate that, and that never gets shown, and it never, but it's like, I mean, just, and it was blatant. I mean, they were on him for 3, 4, 5 seconds, and he's just dropping away at himself.
If they can't communicate on a pre-taped segment and when to put it, so it doesn't look that it's obviously pre-taped,
we'll
do you
there.
Really
we'll
think they're going to communicate here, Lavar?
There you go.
Well,
there you
go. And then later when we get to it, for anybody out there who's going, oh, you're just picking on AEW. No, I would be screaming just as loud, if not louder, if WWE did it. Because again, WWE's had 40 freaking years of experience of live TV.
So I would
call them out on it too.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I talk about this, especially with my good brother in stripe, Brian Hebner. We talk about you. During matches, when you were here, when you were doing this match, did you communicate with the talent? Did you communicate with the producers? Did you communicate with the agents and everybody? I said, yeah, everybody got on the same page, because you had to let the truck know what they needed to see on TV and what you needed to not see on TV. And that's one of the things that the WWE is good at, and WWE and AEW needs to get better at. That's the thing. The communication is the important word that you use there, Justin. Communication between both sides.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, at the end of the day, people are gonna yell, "Oh, the dumb cameraman," or "Oh, the dumb director." And it's like, well, but if they would have known, they would have not.
But you can't blame the cameraman, because he's shooting it, but he's not the one who's calling the shot. He's camera two. The guy who said, "Okay, go to camera," camera two.
So, I mean, it's growing pains, but again, these are things that you gotta tighten up.
Yeah.
We got a backstage Jamie Hayter and the Bunny and all talking. But then Renee interrupts, and they throw up on the monitor there on the set that Saraya and Toni Storm are beating up Dr. Britt Baker somewhere else in the arena. So adding fuel to this continued rivalry going on between the AEW originals, homegrowns, and the new girls on the block, and Saraya and Tony. Nothing much more really here to, dissect. But
other than more potatoes in the bag,
more potatoes in the bag. All right, how about these potatoes? We got the Acclaim. They come out. They give us a nice little live rap. They're going up against, I don't even know these guys' names. I had to do some Googling. Actually, finally found them. The Outrunners are their names. I appreciated the line. I appreciate a reference to the Beverly Brothers, because that's not a tag team that often gets mentioned. So that was pretty cool. The Acclaim gets the, of course, guaranteed victory in this squash match. But the news is post-match here, Issa. Austin and Colton Gunn come out, and they want their answer. They want to know if they can get a tag team title shot with the Acclaim. The Acclaim says no. Then the two teams just start getting each other's face and whatever, and then that enrages Billy. Billy Gunn he's tired of all this I'm tired of all this. Why don't you guys just go ahead and fight? Proceeds to walk out of the ring, up the ramp. His sons then start to say, yeah, go ahead and do what you always did our childhood. Turn your back on us. Why don't you do what you always did? Go drown your sorrows at the bottom of a pill bottle. That then provokes the old man, and I say that with the most respect to how Billy looks. That provokes the old man to get in the ring, get in their face, and say, you want to put your big boy pants on and try to do what I did and become tag champions? You got your tag team championship match against the Acclaimed. And that, of course, stuns the Acclaim. Issa, is this all one big setup for a swerve?
I don't know. And I love it. I miss the therapy segment last week. I saw tweets about it, but I wasn't able to watch the show last week. So I didn't think that the squash match was necessary just to set up this angle. You could have done something backstage and maybe given somebody else the spot or, you know, whatever. The match just happened for them to set up this match. The promo, though, it got too real. It got too real there. I had a legit reaction. It got a reaction out of a lot of people. We'll see where it goes, but it does feel like it has to be because why? I don't know. When I grew up, if I talk to my family like that, I'm not making it out alive, you know?
Jimmy, so the Acclaim says, no, we're not giving you the title shot. And then the Guns, upset and heels and jerks, they get in their face. Why does that enrage Billy so much? Why is that what sets him up? Billy's reaction is as if these guys are all supposed to be friends and supposed to be like part of like a big, like, I don't get that. It's they're not part of one faction. They're not all supposed to be getting along. They're two separate. Like, why, if anything, wouldn't he be happy that his boys are standing up for themselves and trying to, you know, that's the part that threw me off. What was said afterwards was delivered with emotion and effect and whatever, but it felt too forced to manufacture. Why is Billy so upset that his boys want to try to get a tag title shot?
Justin, how dare you come on here and make sense? You know,
I don't know.
No, it is. It's a disconnect. I get that you're trying to create tension and stuff like that. But like you said, the wording basically from Billy made no sense to me. Like, you guys can't just keep doing this and I'm out of here. And, you know, it almost feels like he's setting up for the swerve next week. That's the automatic reaction that a lot of people are getting online, that they think the big swerve is coming next week. Oh, you want to talk like that to me? Okay, you got your shot next week and prove yourself and stuff like that. So it sounds like it's setting up for a big swerve. Could it be a double swerve where they're setting up the audience to think that it is the swerve where he's going to side with his boys, but then he's going to cost his boys in the end? I don't know. It's
confusing. Is it a swerve, bro, or is it a double swerve, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like it's a swerve just based on Justin's point, where it's like the Acclaim say no, but then Billy gets upset and accepts. So that's what made me wonder if that's where upset, the swerve is. Right. He got upset and accepted the tag match. What does that mean? I thought the same thing. I was like, it's a swerve.
Yeah. And the other disconnect to me is the baby faces are saying no. The baby faces are the ones that are supposed to be, oh, you guys think you can, you got
what it takes. Yeah, but the Acclaim are cool baby faces. No, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
I get it. But at the same time, it may make some in the audience go, why wouldn't you guys face these guys?
Yeah, even if they're cool, even if they're cool baby faces, you're supposed to be fighting champions. So, like, you know, I don't know. I'm excited to see this tag match because I like both teams. I like the Acclaim. Mm-hmm. They're super entertaining. Yeah. And I liked the idea of the Gun Boys trying to actually, you know, it was fun at first, their comedy and the Ass Boys, but I like the thought of trying to try to get some legitimacy behind them. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm all for this feud, and I'm all for Billy Gunn being stuck in the middle of he's got his buddies who are, he's got his youth that are keeping him young, and he scissor me daddy, and that's over. But then there's his blood. There's his actual blood boy. So, like, I like him being caught in the middle. I just the execution of why Billy got so upset over this. But maybe we've already answered. Maybe it's, you know, it's going to be revealed. But you know, a lot to really kind of think about from the segment, but something to look forward to for next week to see how they play it out. We go backstage. We talk to Jungle Boy, and he talks about how he enjoyed his time with Jungle Hook. But basically he's been at the top of the tag team mountain and he fell very hard, very far. And in 2023, he's going to be champion, but he's going to be a champion on his own. So Jimmy, Jungle Boy, you know, him and Hook, not going to be a longstanding thing. Jungle Boy going to go looking for singles gold somewhere.
Yeah. And very interesting, but will it be Jungle Boy looking at Hook for a title? Cause what's the title that Hook is? Exactly. Yeah, is that going to be a thing now? Do we have a former tag team not coexisting and not getting along and he going after that? Or is Jungle Boy going to go after a title? Maybe he's other. Oh, we'll get to it later. You know, maybe the TNT title down the road, something like that. I get it. He's over. The crowd loves him. But at the same time, I can't picture them putting the big strap on him and putting their, you know, money behind that.
Well, to that point, Issa, I wouldn't have him go after Hook because, you know, him and Hook are both, you know, two undersized but very over, very good looking,
right?
Male talent. Like I feel like you'd be splitting your audience for no benefit by doing that.
Correct.
But then to Jimmy's point, I don't know if I can picture him going after, you know, the TNT title. So I also almost have to wonder, like, is this where the fact that ROH is all under the same roof? Is this, you know, could he end up going over to ROH? Because he would fit in the ROH mold and a little bit more.
Yeah, I actually automatically think that every time somebody says I'm going after gold, I think there's like 80 freaking belts in AEW. So I personally didn't automatically think Hook, and that might be because of what you stated. I don't need to see them feud. It doesn't feel necessary. Or they can go against tag team gold. Who knows? I get it. But do you remember all
Atlantic title too? Let's not forget about that one.
Yeah, is that the one that's in a backpack somewhere? Is that the one?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you remember when Jungle Boy won his 50th AEW victory and what a big deal they made about it? Because it didn't feel that way for Jade, huh?
Oh, we'll get to that. Yeah, we'll get to that. It's because of the placement on the show, but then again.
Oh, is that why? Is that why?
Yeah.
Hey, at least they're consistent with something there. That's I always say the trains.
Oh, come on. Don't give him credit for that.
That's my heel move for the night.
There you go.
All right. Kanosuke Takeshita, a very growing popularity with the fans, up against Brian Cage. Here's the interesting thing about watching this. This match is pretty good to check out because it really kind of helps put further in perspective how big Takeshita is. Brian Cage is not a small guy, obviously. Brian Cage is built a little bit wider in terms of his overall physique, but Takeshita tall, but Takeshita's not tall and stringy. He's pretty solid himself too. So that was what I took away watching this was the physicality of the two. And Takeshita gets a pretty big win. I don't know what his is called, but he gets a knee to the face, and that's the victory here for Takeshita on Brian Cage. Jimmy, your thoughts on the young Japanese star?
No, I think he's a work in progress. Again, I'm not very familiar with his work overseas, but I'm seeing him now, and I am impressed with him. And I think they've got something there. It all depends on what you do next. What do you do next? And when you talk about what do you do next, what do you do next with someone like a Brian Cage? I hate to change the subject really quickly here, but here's another loss for him. And this is a guy I thought that they could put some steam behind, and I think he's lost a lot of steam. And I don't want to say he's been Wardlowed yet, but the train definitely has left the station, and maybe he's in the caboose right now.
Well, to the Brian Cage point, he is interesting because he still has a Ring of Honor title, but I believe we're on the understanding that Brian Cage, at least his AEW contract, is coming up here shortly. So, when an AEW contract expires, does he still have a Ring of Honor contract? Like, so I'm curious to what that exactly means, but keeping that in mind, he's taking some losses and he might be gone, or at least his contract's expiring soon. So just figure that out. Issa, Takeshita, that's somebody who gets you excited on your live stream.
No, nothing about this match got me excited. I think that it seems to be that they're going somewhere, especially with him kind of like, there was some MJF involvement, so we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But it was an okay match, I guess.
Let me do some super chats here. Of course, if some of them we will get to later when we get to your topic, Corey. I apologize. I should have brought yours up a little bit earlier, but we'll bring this particular one up. Corey Pride saying I like the AEW girls versus the WWE girls storyline. Ruby is especially great in her role. Yeah, I mean they're not calling them the WWE girls. They're saying AEW originals versus the new. But everybody's subconscious kind of goes to that wording, Corey. So yeah, I would agree. And then this one, random, but hey, we'll acknowledge it. Juan saying no Austin or Rocket Mania, it's losing something.
I mean, we haven't had Austin or Rocket Mania for years. Austin broke the streak this year, but I think WWE still has the material there to build some great storylines. All of the last WrestleManias have been very successful, highly profitable, without either one of these guys there. WrestleMania is it, and it's already close to selling out, and they haven't even. Yeah. They had before they even announced a single match. I never see WrestleMania as a failure, regardless of who's in it. I see it as a big marketing packet for them to present to the investors. If I'm being honest.
Yeah. As I said.
I was just saying, Juan, we never know. They Austin or Rock, one or both could still show up just because they're not advertised.
Right. And you know what? I'm looking forward to see what's happening because right now we are on the roads to WrestleMania.
Did Justin Lamar, did you just do the, so you're telling me there is a chance? Listen, I don't care who shows up as long as the tribal chief, head of the table, Roman Reigns, main events both nights so that he can main event 8 WrestleManias, and that way next year we break the record. That's all I care about.
Fair enough. Okay. I will not further argue with the Roman Reigns whisperer that is.
You know that I got made fun of because when I got to ask Cody a question, I asked him about Roman Reigns and everybody was like, why? Why would you kill that man's joy of winning the Rumble to ask him about Roman? Well, he's got to face Roman, technically speaking. Somebody had fair. To ask him.
That's a fair angle of a question.
They asked Rhea, hey, you got to make a choice. I asked Cody, you don't have to make a choice. It's already made for you. Yeah. So how do you feel about that, buddy? You know?
And my mind went as soon as Cody won, we knew, okay, that's official. My mind went to the place where Cody went to the next night on his, or 2 nights later on his promo at Raw, which is, wow, you got Rhodes family, Rhodes legacy versus Anoa'i. I mean, that's two pretty big wrestling families that are going to collide for the first time ever on a Mania.
He answered my question beautifully. Call Roman Reigns the best wrestler in the world right now. So, I mean, I love how he was already selling this WrestleMania main event from that moment. Cody is so good. He's the way he presented himself, picks up the Mountain Dew, the only one that acknowledges the sponsors. I was like, this guy is, no offense to AEW fans, but he's made for WWE, and he killed that press conference. He was so good.
Issa, are you going to LA for Mania?
I am.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Am I going to see you there?
No, I was saying somebody has to do this podcast. I can't do it if I'm in a press conference room with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we'll have so much fun.
Well, we would, but I mean, unless WWE would let us sit there in the press conference room and do this, we can get on.
They did a SummerSlam because they didn't do the presser. Remember, I jumped into the stream that you guys were doing. But now that they do the press conference after, there's no chance to do like an immediate show. But at SummerSlam, they allowed us to stay in and get all of our content out while we were still in there because they didn't do the presser.
Interesting. All right, well.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
We'll miss you, but you'll be doing your thing. Perhaps you can jump in and make a run in that on one of them.
I would love to crash the party. I mean, Roman Reigns main eventing both nights the way that I want to. I don't know if I'll be emotionally stable enough to show up, but I'll try my best.
Yeah. Okay.
I have to take better care of my voice. Last year I did both nights of Mania the podcast, and my voice was shot on the second night, so I need to do better maintenance.
Try doing both nights in person, then your voice will really be shocked.
You've seen me. I've been there and had that problem.
I know. I miss you. You used to be my drinking buddy at these things, you know?
Somebody's got to be here with Jimmy. You know, we got to keep him in line.
Exactly.
We'll let Jack be here with Jimmy.
Oh, he's going to be there too.
Jack's in LA.
He's already in LA, so he's going to be there. Yeah,
I assume. That'll be me, Jimmy. Who knows? Maybe it might be Raj. Who knows? All right. Continuing on here, backstage with the JAS talking about Ricky Starks, and they set up the Garcia Guevara gauntlet is what we're gonna have here, and that's gonna be when I hear gauntlet to me, Jimmy, means everything, all this is in one night, right? So you gotta go through Luke, Daddy Magic, and then maybe Luke and then either Garcia or Guevara, they'll decide that night of, and then if he can get through all of that, then Ricky Starks can have a match with Chris Jericho. I mean, it's a little different because if it is Gauntlet, it's all one night, and that's a story. That's a story of endurance and what have you. But it's like, all right, but then the next thing we go to in a minute here is Brian Danielson, who has to beat all these people to get to MJF. It is right. a little paralleled, but
Yeah, and a little bit in a different way. Like you said, this sounds like it's going to happen all in one night, as opposed to Brian Danielson having to face a different opponent every week. But then again, we don't know that for sure either, because they did not specify that. But yeah, like you said, similarities a little bit too close to each other in some storylines and where they're going, and also with some stuff in the ring, which I'm sure we'll be talking about in this next match.
Yeah, Issa, you're a Ricky Starks fan. What do you think of this gauntlet that he's going to have to do to get to Jericho?
I think Ricky Starks does such a good job at getting the crowd over. I think this is the right match to get him to, like, really get people to support him and get behind him. Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. JAS has not really hit with me. And I would like to see a change there. And I'm not sure that they're elevating the people that they're infused with. I mean, they were with Blackpool Comeback for 6 months, and I just don't feel like anybody came out of that looking any better. So I just hope that it doesn't affect Ricky Starks.
Yeah. How they handle this will be, I'll be curious. I mean, I think at the end of the day, Ricky gets the win on Jericho. I mean, I think that's where this goes, but I don't know. And, yeah. And when this will be, I mean, they already announced several, by the time the show gets done tonight, we already got several things for next Wednesday announced. So this gauntlet sounds like it would take up a good chunk of time, unless he's going to like run through a few of them quickly. I don't know.
Right.
They have been doing that a lot lately, though. They're putting a lot of long matches. The opener today went over, like, I think it took the first half hour of the show. I've noticed that from AEW.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the opener, God, the guys fought for 12 minutes before the bell even rang. So
and then they fought for 15 minutes on the outside and never got counted out. But who's paying attention?
Yeah. Small things, little things.
The ref in the room here was just a reminder. If you've jumped in, didn't hear at the very beginning of the podcast, again, thanks to everybody who's checking us out live, or if you're jumping in after the fact, please leave a comment, like, subscribe on the channel wherever you're at, whether it's Apple Podcasts or on YouTube or on Twitch. The more 5-star ratings and reviews you can give us, the better. It's going to help more and more support. And who knows? Maybe the more and more support that comes, whether it's Mania or SummerSlam or Double or Nothing, maybe this whole podcast could just, we can just pick ourselves up and we'll just go to said place and do this podcast there on site, and can have, you know, some of you there to partake. So
live and in living color, if you will.
If you will, Daddy. Podcast on the road. We're going to take the podcast to the pay window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a plan. All right. Up next, Brian Danielson. He's got to continue his streak of victories in order to get MJF at, what was that? What's March? Full Gear or Revolution? What is it? Full Gear.
Sure. Yes.
No, it's Revolution. Revolution.
Yes.
It's March 5th. I remember that.
Yes.
Here we go. Brian Danielson up against Timothy Thatcher. This is exactly what you'd expect it to be. It is equal parts technical, equal parts hard hitting. There's a ref bump. Ref's down. MJF comes out. It looks like he's going to get involved. And then Takeshita comes out of nowhere, cuts him off, fights, and they battle to the back. More on that here in a minute. But Brian Danielson is going to get that running knee and is going to beat Thatcher. Very entertaining match, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Two matches in a row with a knee to the face finish.
Yeah, again, here's the communication thing between people in matches and producers or agents of matches. What are you doing for a finish? What are you doing for a finish? Everybody, it goes to somebody, does it not? I'm assuming it, you know, when you come up with a finish, it goes to somebody, and somebody has to say, hey, you guys are doing the same finish. One of you has to figure it out. Let's put it that way. And again, lack of communication between... Yes, we get it that guys in the match, during a match, have to communicate with each other and the referee and so forth. But there has to be communication between the talent on the show and the production people as well, like we talked about earlier. And the other thing I found interesting here, you brought up the ref bump, which they don't do very often there, but it felt like it wasn't necessary. You know, it was a ref bump.
Because no cheating happened, right?
Right. You could still do the spot where MJF comes out and teases, and he's trying to distract Brian Danielson and put on the ring, and Brian's paying attention to that, and then have Takeshita come out and do his thing. And maybe that's where Thatcher does a quick roll up for a false finish or something like that, making it look like, you know, there was the distraction. You didn't need to take the ref out for this.
That's such a great point you make. I didn't even think of it from that perspective. I thought to myself, and I wrote down rare ref bump, because you're right, they don't often do it. And that's true. The time they decide to do it, there's not even any cheating that happens. There's so many other times that they could have justified having a ref bump. So that's interesting. Issa, tell me this. Why every time I see Timothy Thatcher, and this goes back to when he was in NXT too, every time I see him, why do I think that he's British? When this dude was born in California, but I see him, his look and his style, I think he's related to William Regal.
I thought for the longest time that he was. And I was like asking, I was like, well, what can we watch him wrestle right now? I'm waiting for some British, companies to be brought up, but apparently he's not. So you're not alone on that.
He's from California.
Yeah, you're not alone on that. I thought the same thing too. Maybe, hey, he looks international. More power to him. That draws, that sells, you know? I thought he looked great tonight. I did. Yeah, I liked him a lot.
His appearance, the ring gear, the style, the look. I feel like he's like a descendant of William Regal. A compliment of he projects this hard hitting bare knuckle style that we associate to some of the European greats and brawlers. I don't know why I'm like what stereotype am I projecting? But I'm like, no, it's just he comes off as the tough European, but he's not European at all.
No, yeah, and I agree with you both. I thought he was a great performance. I loved the match. But when you look at the audience, they weren't as enthralled, they weren't as drawn in as they normally are when you watch an AEW show. You know, they did the timely chants that they're supposed to do, the yes chants with Bryan Danielson and that stuff, the yes, 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 and all that stuff. But other than that, they looked like they were enjoying it, but they were seated. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were a little bit on the quiet side.
I caught that. I don't think a lot of the crowd, maybe, I don't know if they were as familiar or maybe they weren't as entertained with the match. It wasn't my favorite Bryan match from this saga of to get to MJF. I still think that Bandido match just set the bar so high that I don't know that anything that he has to go through to get to MJF is going to outdo that. But I personally liked it. I thought it was a fine match for what it was. Is it my favorite that I've seen Bryan doing the last 4 weeks? No, but you're never going to get a bad match from Bryan. So it was a good match. It was there.
Yeah. All right. So here's an extension of this. So MJF and Takeshita are fighting backstage and in the hallway. Things are flying, fists are flying, people trying to separate them. Renee comes in, has hot breaking news per Tony Khan that next week we're going to see Takeshita versus MJF on Dynamite. Obviously, that's a big deal because MJF is not wrestling every week, so that's a big deal. And Takeshita's obviously got some momentum going. So there's that. And then literally, I think we have a break, but literally the next piece of content we get is we see MJF dressed in a totally different outfit with his glasses on, hair perfectly combed, he is fully calm and composure, comes into a dressing room where Roosh and company are, and proceeds to offer them money, as we see him do many a time. He likes to buy his way out of problems. I'm fine with that. That's good continuity. Tries to buy his way out and says, you're going to break Bryan Danielson's arm. You're going to settle this for me. Mm-hmm. The concept of again, this is MJF's deal. He throws money at his problems. Great concept, Jimmy.
Yeah.
But continuity. This is obviously a pre-tape that was done either, if not earlier today, maybe it was done last week. I don't know, whatever. But they literally, the 2 minutes later, we see MJF completely, like, I couldn't help. I was like, this is so jarring. How can If commentary even says our cameras caught this earlier today, mm-hmm. or something, but they didn't even, I don't know. I go ahead.
What more can you say than that? Yes, everybody talks about, and you mentioned earlier, WWE having the 40-year head start. This is only 3 years for AEW, but this is kindergarten crap. I mean, like, this is simple. How could you let something like this slide? Nobody is paying attention to what's going on. You know, I'm doing this spot later, not later, literally in the next segment, and I'm not dressed in the same clothes that I'm doing. You know what I mean? At least have commentary, like you said, cover it in some form or fashion. This was a scene earlier today, or this is whatever the case may be. It's just, it's, you know, I always talk about the little things. This is a combination of little things that are building up into a big thing. And it's, and we're not having an issue a lot with the in-ring product. It's the production stuff. It's the, it's the camera work. It's talent working together with production to present something in continuity that makes sense and makes people go, hey, you know what? I'm buying into this. Not make people go, oh, you know what? He wasn't wearing that 2 minutes ago.
You know what makes this an even bigger fail? That MJF shirt that he was wearing earlier, the black one, it's on sale. You can pre-order it. The Better Than You shirt, that's why he was wearing it. They're promoting it. So why not have him walk around wearing that. Yeah, so why not have him walk around wearing the damn shirt in every single segment that he takes so that you can freaking promote it and people go and pre-order it? Like, the whole thing was just an epic fail in all levels. I get it, you know, but the fact that they didn't even say earlier today or put it earlier on the show so that it looks like he got changed for something else, I don't know. It took me out. I couldn't even remember. Yeah, he offers Rouge money, I think. I can't even tell you what went down, because as soon as I saw him walking in a complete different outfit, composed, I was like, this is a major L. It is. And they need, it's the little things that make AEW want to strangle it, because I don't know, you can strangle a company, but I want to strangle AEW sometimes because they do something so right, but what they do wrong really bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, and again, to give more specific context, if you watch, and maybe you watched casually and you turned away and didn't see this and you need to go back and see this, or if you didn't watch at all and you want to know what to look for, Renee announces that, and when she announces per Tony Khan that match is going to happen between Takeshita and MJF next week, MJF is livid. And he finally, after he gets separated by security, the last shot is watching him walk away down the hallway. I mean, hair's disheveled. He's just been in a scrum, and he's pissed, and he's walking and stomping away. I almost thought maybe he's going to stomp his way out to the ring and cut a big promo and shoot on Tony. But he's walking. So obviously the idea is, okay, he's storming away, and he has problems that he needs to go solve. But then again, and he's so enraged. But then again, like this, 2 minutes, and they go to commentary, and Taz is defending MJF. The other, you know, and he's like, "How can Tony just put the champion in a match?" And the other two are like, "Oh, whatever, whatever." And then he just walks in, and like we said, he's just dressed totally different, completely composed, and he's not. And if anything, I would have expected him to walk in and said to Roosh, "Go break Takeshita's arm and leg right now. I don't want to deal with this little runt." But no, he switches. I don't know.
Bad product placement, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Again, communication needed to be there.
Communication breakdown.
All right, for your TBS champion, up next, Jade Cargo versus Red Velvet.
The women at what time, Labar? Right before the main event, you say?
That was 9,
right?
9:30. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Choo-choo. Jade has to work a little bit, but she does get her win number 50. Mm-hmm. But Issa, like I said, no pomp and circumstance, no balloons, no confetti. Just it was nice to see her. She grabs her daughter and walks out with her daughter in hand. 50 wins, big deal. First female talent with 50 wins in AEW. They are taking their time with this and her. Issa, when do things get kicked into the next gear? When do we see the first? Because there has not been a match, right? There has not been a Jade Cargo match where you even have the slightest bit of that might be the person that beats her. We haven't even had that yet.
When you allow Jade Cargo to start fighting the main girls, Jade Cargo has 50 wins. None of them are against the main girls that we saw earlier on those segments. We haven't seen her against Britt Baker or Soraya or Toni Storm or Sheeta. You're just letting her beat talent. Like, how many of these 50 wins have even been on TV? Like, it doesn't feel like it's a big deal. And you don't want to fumble the bag with somebody that looks like Jade. She's made for you. Like, she looks like a star. She has it. And for some reason, you're not booking her in the fields that she should be booked in. And that's why it doesn't feel like it's a big deal. And it was the 50th win. And it took me a while to figure it out tonight when I was, like, researching before I went live. I was like, oh my God, this is her 50th win. I will say, I can see why you would be a little skeptical of it on the beginning, because Jade is just getting started in this industry, but she's getting better. And she's not going to get better if you don't give her better dance partners here. So you got to take the risk and you got to let her go. I can't wait to see her be infused that feel like they're significant and matter.
Jimmy, is that the hold up here? Is it she's collected 50 wins, but a lot of her opponents are just, it's like you just kind of dismiss them. Are we hesitating to put her in a match with real heavy competition because she is still green, or what do you think is going on here?
I wish I had an answer to that. In my opinion, she has progressed fairly well. She looks like a star. When you see her, you know, like you talk about,
she has it.
Yeah, she does have it, but it's her opponents. And when you look at the list, I did that during the show, I went to the list of the talent roster on the women's side of AEW, and I'm looking down the list and I'm going, okay, who could be the one to possibly push her to the limit and maybe even dethrone her? And I'm like scratching my head going, maybe a Britt Baker, maybe. It just doesn't feel like that TBS title has been elevated enough because she hasn't faced that quality opponent. So I think it's a little bit of, you know, like you said, she needs some higher level talent in the people's eyes to face and defeat, to not only elevate the championship, but elevate her as well.
You know, she, it's on the screen here, Dylan Matthews. Thank you, Dylan. One of our loyal regulars saying Tony Khan is scared to test Jade in 10 plus minute matches. Well, Dylan and company, this might be where the house rules, these house shows might come into play, because they might be able to then get away with advertising, and I'm just going to use Troy, Ohio, because it's the first town they're going to. Advertise in Troy, Ohio, Jade Cargill versus Saraya. And it's only going to be advertised locally around Troy. It's not going to be something that they're going to be necessarily promoting on Dynamite each week or whatever. It's just going to be the local. It's the same way that WWE for 30, 40 years, there might be two guys that are going to fight on a pay-per-view in the main event. And you, if you go to a house show leading up, you might see them. You know, there's no title change, but it's basically the guys getting to work with each other to figure out what's working, what's getting a pop with the crowd. And so that might be an advantage of, you know, going to the local radio in Troy, around Troy, Ohio, and saying, you're going to see Saraya, you know, who's got all of her accolades versus 50-win TBS champ Jade Cargill. And of course, it's going to end in a DQ or something that's going to protect both and protect the title not being changed, but it'll give Jade real reps with somebody of Saraya's experience in front of people, but it not be on TV. And so if it is a blunder or botch, just the 5,000 in Troy saw it.
I also don't think that, and I agree with the point and I see it, but I also don't think that you need to put Jade in 10 plus minute matches. She looks like she could squash anybody, man or woman, in there in about 5 minutes just by looking at her. So if that's what you're afraid of, book her like the beast that she's supposed to be, because she looks it. So why not just book her that way instead of exposing that she might not be there yet by giving her longer matches? If you had Jade Cargill come out there and finish Red Velvet today in a minute, I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good point.
Well, and Issa, no, I agree with you. It, this is where it does come into the Goldberg theory of it. Does the matches don't have to be long, but eventually she will have to be able to go.
Right. Said, let her get her reps in like house shows and dark and elevation. But if that's what you're afraid of, then book her like a destroyer. And I think that would even get her more over, because she looks like that. And you don't have women that look like that.
Yeah. For TV, it should be quick. But if they're going to start doing some of these non-televised shows, let that be the ones where you, because obviously she can only learn so much in a 3 minute match with, I'm just using again a veteran like Saraya. She can only learn so much in a 3 minute match where there's only so much heat, there's only so much hope, there's only so much comeback, whatever. Where if you give her more time, it forces her to learn how to put together a longer match and sustain. So there's all kinds of philosophies to it. Point is, Jade looks like a star, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe when she walks out of the curtain, I believe she's a star.
Right.
It's just we're getting to a point now where I think we're starting to feel a restlessness of, we got to get to the next level with this.
Exactly. And like you said, and that popped in my head too, where doing these live events / house shows is the perfect opportunity to help her and put her in the ring with talent that could help elevate her game.
Ron Taylor, $5 super chat. Ron says Jade is too big time for these AEW ham and eggers. She needs to face the WWE NXT talent. Can't wait until she jumps ship when her contract is up. I don't know her contract situation. And Ron, I might. This doesn't mean anything. I think this is actually the case for several people. I actually think Jade. I think WWE had a chance on Jade. I don't think that they. You know, so but again, they also had a chance at Wardlow, and they passed on Wardlow. They so it, whatever. But I don't know what her contract situation is, Ron. I also don't know. Again, this is where I don't know. I know Jade's involved in like fitness modeling, and she's an influencer. Obviously, she's a mom. I don't. Maybe the again, maybe the AEW schedule is attractive to her. Maybe, and I don't know. So, but you know. Yeah.
Big, quick question that you said, now that you mentioned mom, and you also mentioned at the end of the match that she picked up her daughter and walked her to the back. Is Jade supposed to be a heel?
I don't know. I it's funny. Somebody asked me on Twitter, and I legit don't know.
I don't know either, because you know what? If she's supposed to come off as arrogant and, you know, pomp and a bit of heelish, carrying her daughter to the back doesn't make you a heel. It makes people go, oh, look at that. You know, and it was a nice moment. Don't get me wrong. It was a beautiful moment, but, you know.
I agree. I mean, Issa, you know me, I always say there's a fence. There's the one side of the yard and the other side of the yard. Yeah. If you ask me, I would say Jade's on the heel side of the yard based upon her actions, the baddies, the way she talks and treats other people. I would say she's a heel. But, yeah, then that's a babyface thing to do, to grab your kid. I don't know.
Yeah, I go back and forth with Jade a lot, because a lot of times I feel like, yeah, she's in the heel side of things, but a lot of times I see her and she puts in the work. So her being arrogant / cocky, she can't. If there's somebody that can act like I'm the best, look at me, nobody's going to beat me, it's her. I don't necessarily think that's a heel move, but I think different. You know, I always root for the bad people. So you're asking the wrong person.
That is true. I am asking the wrong person there. All right, main event time.
This is all right. Wild.
This is wild. I'm not going to try to do the play-by-play justice of what was seen here. I will say, real quick, again, to people who did not see the match, if you're looking to us to give you bullet points of what to go check out, this match is worth watching if you like violence, because it is that. And so here we go. It is Samoa Joe versus Darby Allin. The Darby is your TNT champion. Darby comes out and he is wearing a hoodie that is laced with thumbtacks in it. Mm-hmm. So it's the more deadly version of what D'Lo Brown wore for years there.
Yep.
As the chest protector. So Darby gets in the ring and he wants to use it. Quickly though, Joe eventually just gets it off of him. I like the logic of Joe wrapping his own hand in the towel to go hit Darby so he doesn't hurt his hand on that. Mm-hmm. Things get crazy pretty quick. Joe's on the outside. Joe goes to pull a table out from under the ring.
I love this spot so much.
Joe has the table. He has the legs and all the metal facing him. It is standing vertical, staring at him. Darby suicide dives himself in a million miles per hour through the ropes into the table, and if you watch it slowly or go rewind it, the side of the metal bracket of the table goes right into Joe's eyebrow and slices him. This was not a Moxley blade job. This was this table slicing Joe, and in a matter of 5 seconds, blood is squirting out of his forehead and his eyebrow area.
Yeah,
I mean, it was, guys. I the visual was like, oh my god! Like, to the point, I was like, oh, they have to stop them, because, like, I mean, can Joe see? Like, what? Of course, he goes on. He is Samoa Joe. They go on. They fight into the crowd. They go halfway up the Nutter Center. Darby's getting flung down the steps of the building. All the stuff. They finally get back in the ring after all kinds of craziness. Darby puts his thumbtack jacket back on, does a coffin drop with it onto Joe. That's a two count. We keep going. Darby flies outside, crash and burns into another table. Finally, Darby starts to rip the canvas and the any protective foam up. And so now it is just the hard plywood boards exposed in the one corner. And ultimately, Joe hits a muscle buster from the top rope on Darby onto the exposed board. So there is no padding, no nothing. Joe gets the win. He is your new TNT champ again. And then is the return of Wardlow. Wardlow comes out, tackles Joe, gets a few shots in on Joe, but Joe escapes any powerbomb symphony from happening. Whole lot to unpack here, Jimmy. Where do you want to start?
I don't know. Where do you begin? Do you begin with the with Darby Allin seemingly not going to continue with a long career if he continues the way he was going? I mean, the spot on the stairs, on the concrete stairs outside the ring, and that others where he dropped him on the chairs, and not on the flat side of the chairs, on the two backs of the chairs back to back together and stuff like that. The only issue I had with it is, yes, I get the point of him fighting through the pain and trying to continue with the match, but it felt like this stuff was so devastating. It should have been sold more. If that makes any kind of sense. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I was watching this match and they were really working their asses off, both of them. And especially Joe to get Darby over as an undersized opponent to a guy as big and as strong and as vicious as Joe. And that spot you talked about, you know, with the table to the head that busted Joe open. That was just Joe busting himself open, doing a blade job with a table. Mm-hmm. Catching it on camera again. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, poor Darby, you know, man, if you continue like this, you're not going to have a long career.
I know. I say that every week we see him. I'm like, this isn't going to last forever. Issa, so we see Wardlow, and I've been asking, you know, I've been saying, look, you know, Wardlow, you know, you missed the lightning in the bottle. You lost some lightning in the bottle with him. Let's regain it. I think he might have been dealing with some injuries, so maybe that explains and gives you a reason for why he's not on screen. As happy as I always am to see my guy, I can't help but think, like, you just showed us all that brutality. Just let that end the night.
Right.
Let Joe's victory end the night. Wardlow doing that, and Wardlow didn't even get really redemption. He didn't even get a powerbomb on Joe. He basically just got a few punches. It made me forget the headline. It made me forget all about what Darby just did.
Right. I 1,000% agree. I don't like the hair. I don't like the hair, but we don't need to get into those kind of details. Yeah, I wish they would have just let – I mean, the TNT title changes hands a lot, and I'm not sure that people are happy with it, that it keeps changing hands. What is the point to give Darby that run when he just loses it to Joe again? There's a lot to process here. So I would have rather seen Joe win and then maybe do something with Wardlow at Rampage or at next week. Even after that, though, to be honest with you, I didn't want this to be the return of Wardlow because I'm still thinking of what Darby and Samoa Joe did. I'm not going back to, oh my God, Wardlow's back. I'm going back to, oh my God, that match was absolutely insane. I really liked the table spot, but it felt a little bit reckless. Like think that out. Like, that could have been really, really bad, the way that Samoa Joe got cut. If it was maybe once little, an inch to a different side, that could have gone wrong. And I didn't like Darby trying to expose the ring. That took forever. I was like, at this point, Samoa just got to be refreshed. He probably took a nap. They probably stitched his cut up. Like, he took forever. But Darby being undersized and using his whole body as a weapon, while I agree with you, he's not going to have a long career, I can buy into it. I'm not a big fan of the smaller wrestler, but there is not a Darby match that I do not scream or pop. Like, he always does something that makes me go, oh my God. And I thought it was an excellent match. If somebody's watching or listening to us and didn't get a chance to watch, that's the one thing that I would tell you, go watch, because it was incredible what they did out there.
Yeah, Mr. X says, I'm about to lay down, listen to the podcast on my TV via YouTube. Peace out, Wrestling Inc. fan. Thank you, Mr. X. Have a good night. Yeah, it's first off, again, we have the luxury of armchair booking this after we see how it goes out. So, again, that's, you know, Tony Khan is not. So, that's I want to put that out there. But I guess it's like, if you're going to give that crazy of a ridiculous performance, which both guys did, Joe and Darby, I mean, again, that's insane what they did, the spots they did. That's enough to end your show on.
Right.
And then you can get another moment when next Wednesday, start Dynamite out with Joe going to the ring. I'm back to being your ratings winner. I'm back to being your TNT champion. I survived the maniac that was Darby Allin, and then hit Wardlow's music and do that same exact thing you just did. Wardlow comes out, tries to fight him. Joe skips out. And that's a whole other moment that for another Dynamite that you've just captured. I don't know that was needed to end the show. And again, then it just kind of it doesn't bury, but it just takes away what Darby just did and what Joe just did.
Exactly. And to further your point, like at first I was thinking to myself, we didn't need that physicality after the match, because as I always say, people are probably tired of hearing it, 20 pounds of potatoes in a 10 pound bag, here we go again. I thought all you had to do was have Wardlow come out on the stage, look at Joe and go, hey, me and you.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, something simple like that. But, but would that be a little bit too much as well? Because it would take away from what Darby did. You know what I mean? It could be more like Joe just went through a grueling match with Darby Allin, surviving all this crazy chaos. And as he's raising his hand, giving him a look and going, oh, my. This kid, you know what I mean? That would have helped Darby's spot.
Yeah. Issa, you're saying how it took so long for Darby. I had flashbacks of my own experience one time at a show. I was managing RJ City at the time, and actually Wardlow might have been still our bodyguard. But it might have been before Wardlow started having matches. But nonetheless, RJ was the focus, and I was so nervous all day. Not because I was going to get bumped or anything else. I could do all that stuff. I was so nervous all day because we were part of the main event, and there was going to be a critical spot that was going to involve me having to cut zip ties. There was a tool they were going to keep under the ring, and I had to cut certain zip ties, and I had to dismantle. It was how our turnbuckle pads were kept. Earlier in the day, I'm looking and I'm like, and I'm talking to the ring crew. I'm like, can we get some more slack in these? I mean, I can barely get a piece of pliers in.
They're tight, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the ring crew's like, no, we got to do it this way, or else it's clear you guys are on last. This thing's gonna fall off before we get to it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, can we somehow loosen it prior to our match? Like, is there anything that could be done? Because we'd routinely have like the ring crew come in between matches and make sure whatever.
Right.
And they're like, no, it can't be that way. And I was so nervous. And then when the time came and, lights or whatever, like I eventually got it, but it felt like the longest 5 seconds in the world trying to cut zip ties and whatever. And I got fans heckling me oh my God. I had
if
like,
you did it in 5 seconds, you succeeded. Cause I felt like Darby was cutting stuff for like 5 minutes. I know it wasn't 5 minutes, but it really felt that way.
Yeah. It was that was my whole worry all day. RJ sings us to the ring. He remembers words to great lyrics. He's got the whole match to worry about. I got to worry about a few heat spots and cutting some zip ties. And I'm panicking with these pliers all day trying to figure out how we're going to cut these zip ties.
You know what? On house show rings, we used to do the zip ties. And then I forget who it was, got caught because they were supposed to untie it. And he saw the zip ties. And he just grabbed it, just yanked it off and just popped them. Everybody went, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I want to say maybe it was Brock. Yeah.
But sound par for a course.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's funny. Oh, man. Well, that was AEW Dynamite tonight. It was not boring. I'll give you that.
No, it was a pretty good episode of Dynamite. I will give them that. But it just, again, these screws need to be tightened, especially in the production department. They need to get together and talk about what's happening on the show and letting the production team know, hey, when there's certain situations like we talked about in the first match with the Moxley situation, he has to go and let them know, or somebody has to let somebody know.
Well, I'll say this. Right. We talked about weeks ago how AEW had a pretty significant hire, former WWE production person, who's now leading their TV, and I know that person will have noticed the things that we critique tonight, and so while it can't be unseen or undone from what happened tonight on live TV, it will be corrected and it will be brought up and it will be catalyst for better practices, whether again it's more production meetings or whatever. Mm-hmm. So again, I said earlier, growing pains. That's what it is. This will help the ship and things get tightened, it will. So, you know, if we want to take positive out of it, that's what's going to happen. And there's other things about the production and visuals that I think have been greatly improved. Whether you want to talk about where the how the commentators are shot and presented, there's a lot of little things that are, actually have been improved, I think, visually from a TV standpoint on AEW that we don't talk about because we don't really have a reason to.
I agree.
But I want to, I want to give their shout out. I don't want to sound like I'm just, you know, crapping on.
Right. Because we want to see them get better.
Yep.
Right.
That's all. Yeah. We really do. Like, I know I get called out for being an anti AEW. I'm not an anti AEW guy. I just want to see them do better.
Yeah. So that was Dynamite. Again, please, thanks everybody for being part of this tonight with us. So many familiar, great faces. Love it. Somebody, G Roy J, no offense. Yeah, I know. I managed RJ for 4 or 5 years on the independent scene. We had several successful title reigns.
RJ is tremendous. What can I tell you? Yeah.
Oh my God, just tell me about RJ before everybody found out about him. He was like, you need to check him out. He's hilarious. And I've been following him. I love seeing him now, everything that he's doing. But yeah, you've been around RJ for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, and I always said, RJ City has to get himself on national television.
Yeah.
It's a crime that he's not. And RJ, real quick, RJ's on TV in Canada. He was on Canadian Nickelodeon. And, some others. But I was like, he needs to get on mainstream American television because he's just too damn witted, quick-witted to not be used.
Absolutely.
So I'm happy.
Can you imagine him on Whose Line Is This Anyway?
Didn't the WWE
superstars just did the Wheel of Fortune? Can you imagine him on that?
I have fun. RJ is so fun to be around. I have one memory where we all, I don't remember where, what town or whatever we were in, but everybody went out afterwards for some late dinner and maybe a soda pop or two. RJ pulls up to the bar with the rest of us. He orders a Shirley Temple and just, you know, especially if you can get him interacting with people that don't know us, that are not part of the wrestling crowd, just to watch him interact with people.
Right.
At a gas station or wherever, he just life is his canvas. Every situation, every day, he finds this is a chance to entertain somebody.
Mm-hmm.
He's brilliant. He's a good person. He's a good guy. Like happy supporting the guy.
Yeah. No. It's like you said. It's a crime that he's not on national television right now.
Yeah. So hopefully the AEW continues to take off. All right.
When they do it in Canada, it should be EHEW.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he has coffee in his underwear. I watched those.
He makes coffee in his underwear. Oh, RJ. All right, that was the show tonight. Again, like, subscribe, comment, do all the things, please. I mean, look, free podcast is going to keep being free for you. So at least I ask you, just take like 1 minute out of your day and just take a minute to hit 5 stars, leave a nice comment, what have you.
Nice.
We'll keep giving you free content. I just ask you to do that so we can continue to grow this podcast the way we want to do it. Jimmy, plug away.
Plug away at Jimmy Corderas on Twitter, at Real Jimmy Corderas on Instagram, and all my social media platforms. You can catch me here on Monday nights with Triple J usually. And on Wednesday nights, it's Justin, Issa, and myself covering Dynamite. And now I talk Reffing It Up with my good brother in stripes, Ryan Hebner, on Wednesdays. And this week's topic, Sir William Regal.
Ooh.
Ooh. See, I like that too. I like Brian because he's a Hebner. That's referee royalty. And Brian Hebner, if I gather, he and I share the same football team. We're both Washington.
You guys are both Commanders.
Commanders. So
yes.
I don't think I've ever talked to Brian about that. But he's close to he's close to me for that reason.
Yeah, and also the Ref and Rants you can check out from Monday to Friday. If I didn't mention that,
love the rest.
And if I did, and if I didn't mention, if I did mention it already, hey, I mentioned it again.
Jimmy, I have been working your Ref and Rants into my morning routine, to where when I am having coffee, I feel like it's like my 1 minute to have coffee with you. So I do cue them up, and if I see them on my timeline at, let's say, 9 a.m. If I haven't poured my coffee yet, I go
right
to later, so I pour my coffee, and then I cue it back up so I can have my 1 minute coffee with Jimmy.
It's like, it's really funny that you say that, because my routine with Jimmy is what I get done at the gym. I always sit down in the locker room for a second with the headsets, like, leave me alone. That's when I actually watch the refing run. So you always see me like it at a different time, because I work out at a different time every day. But that's my minute with Jimmy. It's like when I need quiet time.
Thank you both so much. That means a lot. It really does.
They need to be longer. I know you always leave us wanting more, but 1 minute. I mean, come on, 1 minute. My coffee's so hot. I'm like, I get like one sip out of it.
I get that, but at the same time, leaving you wanting more is the way it should be.
Right? It's the way to go. Yep, it is.
That's what I'm told in life. Leave me wanting more. Issa, go ahead, plug away.
NYC Demon Diva on YouTube and so close to 20,000. I want to get there before WrestleMania. So if you guys could subscribe, I would greatly appreciate it.
There you go. Leave the 5-star rating here for us for our podcast. Go over to her, give her a subscribe. Yeah. Appreciate it. Again, follow me at Justin Labar across Twitter and across Instagram. My latest post, I posted a fun picture of me as a kid with King Kong Bundy. So that's my social media is right now. I stumbled upon a picture of me and him and catering at a show in the 90s where he's holding a piece of cheese and I'm wearing a bad, ugly sweater. It's pretty fun.
Not to cut you off, because you brought up something that today I was looking through something and it brought up a picture from like 1983, a picture of the big fro, myself and Buzz Sawyer. Scared my wife. Yeah. She goes, thank God you don't look like that now.
But so she, Aldra didn't know you in 1983, right?
No, she didn't know me in 83. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't born yet, but anyways, I could throw that at you, Jimmy.
Thank you. No, that's okay.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I get it.
So that was my social push of the day. Follow me at Justin Labar, of course, here on the Wrestling Podcast all throughout the week, Monday, Wednesdays, Friday morning. I'll be back this week with Dave LaGreca and Thunder Rosa spar with Labar. We're going to talk all things Royal Rumble, so that'll be very entertaining. Again, thank you for everybody on this podcast. Much appreciated. Oh, I do have one more super. I'm sorry, Corey. Your super chats were sliding past me today. We'll let Corey end the show, which is him saying, is this repackaging of Wardlow going to work? He looks less menacing with a new look, plus Samoa Joe outshines him every way. He didn't look any less menacing. He doesn't have the long hair, but he's still Wardlow. He's still
Wardlow, but yeah. I thought it was going to be easy to get used to it, but I did see a difference. I do miss the hair, but we'll see where it goes. I did think they brought him out with a hot angle to end the night, so maybe it's a good reset for Wardlow. Happy birthday to Ricky Saldivar in the chat, by the way. I know he's always in the chat and it is his birthday, so happy birthday to Ricky.
There's Ricky. Yes. Ricky. Born in 1989, also well after Jimmy's fro picture.
Yeah, I already been riffing for 2 years, so anyways.
That's awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you, Dylan. Appreciate the last comment there. All right. With that said, we are going to call it a night. Appreciate all of you. We're back next Wednesday, but you got many more podcasts on the Wrestling Channel. So just subscribe and you won't miss a thing. Appreciate it. Be safe. Good night. Wrestling, it brings us all together.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.